All right, welcome everyone. Just waiting for the credits to roll so we can coordinate for the viewing audience. All right, good. Thank you. We're ready to go. Welcome, everyone. This is a special meeting of City Council on Wednesday, January 17, 2018. We are at the Veterans Memorial Hall. Meeting is starting at 4:30 or thereabouts. For the record, we do have a quorum. All members are present. We'll call the meeting to order. We are going to be discussing to provide direction on the draft request for proposals for our WRF on-site improvements. And we don't have any formalities to this meeting, so we'll open up with public comment. I do have a few speaker slips, so for any of those who would like to speak for public comment, if you can grab a public comment speaker slip in the back and turn it in up here, that would be great. First up would be Ken Green. Thanks, Ken.
Mr. Mayor, council members, staff members, my issue is, what exactly is the project? The last thing that I've seen that has been approved and voted on is what you all did on April 25th, 2017. And I've spent the last couple of hours delightfully reviewing the YouTube video, trying to see if I could get a verbatim transcript to read back to you. But boy, is that difficult, and boy, do I appreciate stenographers at this time. In any event, at about 5.5 hours into your meeting, there were a couple of motions that were made. The first of these motions was made by Councilmember McPherson to have staff appoint a team of local experts to evaluate current plans and to come up with information on two alternatives. The alternatives were full secondary treatment that, with additional treatment in the future, could become reclaimable, and the other alternative was full tertiary, and there were additional components to the motion. The motion passed 3-2. The meaty one that I want to get to was proposed at 5:31:10 by Council Member Heading, and he was addressing Mayor Irons as the conversation began, and I'll quote, at one point, maybe a couple of months ago, you made the comment about purely building and concentrating on a wastewater facility, which thus includes the other component. But, you know, my feeling is we shouldn't be looking at any other costs associated with building on that site other than a wastewater treatment facility right now. Immediately, Council Member McPherson said, oh, I fully agree with that. Heading said, we need a motion for that. Mayor Irons said, so moved. Any discussion? There was no discussion from the council. David Buckingham, however, wanted some clarification on how to instruct staff dealing with both motions. And at 5:32:25, he said, and I quote, goal number one is tertiary disinfected wastewater, and I think we are going to come back with that and something less than that. Council Member McPherson said, correct. Shortly after that, Buckingham said, goal number two is reclaimed wastewater, and we are not going to consider that at all. No comment from anybody, but then a conversation ensued with Mayor Irons about what exactly was going to get scratched from the motion. In any event, as I understand it, the motion is we should not be looking at any other costs associated with building on that site other than a wastewater treatment facility right now. The conversation with Buckingham confirmed that. The motion passed 5-0.
Thank you, Ken. Homer Alexander and David Nelson following Homer. Thanks. Welcome.
My name is Homer Alexander. I have two suggestions regarding the RFQ. The first pertains to the cost plus proposal table that begins on page 2 of attachment C. I know the project team and the regulators think of this as one project, but accurately determining how the capital cost and life cycle cost will be allocated between wastewater treatment and water reclamation is very important. I believe the RFQ should clearly indicate to the potential bidders that they provide sufficient cost detail that is organized in a way that will allow the new project director and the city's finance director the ability to accurately separate the costs for the processes that are necessary to treat wastewater from the additional processes that are required to further treat the water so it can be reclaimed. The city's finance director must be able to determine what portion of the project should be charged to the sewer fund versus the water fund. Misallocation of costs between these two funds has the potential to affect the community support for any future sewer rate increase. I'm not sure the layout in the cost plus proposal table will allow for easy and accurate way to split the costs. In the first category, treatment process, the line items appear to be in enough detail to separate the cost. It is the other five categories that appear to be more general and therefore might make it difficult to separate the costs accurately. The project team may want to consider adding a second column with instructions and explanation for the reason it is needed. My second suggestion is to remove the requirements from the RFQ for decommissioning and the demolition of the existing plant for a number of reasons. Is it necessary to add to the capital costs of the new plant now for a project that in the best of circumstances will not happen for at least 4 years? I do not have a background in the construction industry, but I suspect that the demolition of the plant would be less expensive if bids were sent to firms that specialize in just demolition. As a separate project, there is the possibility that grants might be available from public agencies or private organizations for turning a brown field into a green field. And finally, since the city does not own the plant or the ground outright, wouldn't it make sense to involve your partner before you choose a demolition contractor, especially considering that you're going to ask them to pay for 40% of the costs? Thank you.
Thanks, Homer. David Nelson, and then Larry Truesdale.
Hi, David Nelson. I'm here to just say, again, this is not a good project. It's just not. You know, I talk about PERC, and I'm not a cheerleader for PERC, but PERC is something that came here and showed us something, and that's what I base my opinion on. I've read your documents to what you want to build here. This is just found this today. It says Santa Paula Water Recycling Facility awarded Plant of the Year. This was for 2016. Now, come on. Now, I know that there's been a lot of whining about PERC, but nobody's even brought anybody like PERC in here to question that. I mean, what you're showing me here, we're moving our plant like 3 miles. If you say that to some engineer someplace, he's going to go, why? And there's better sites. We have it. This site has been such a moving target. I just didn't even bother reading the documents that you're sending out here. I looked them over, but I'm not going to waste my time on it. I mean, it's just wrong. I mean, you should be doing better for this community. This plant that they built for Santa Paula was built for 29,000 people, and it's handling 1.9 million gallons or 2.9 million gallons a day. It's capable of a 7 million gallon circulation. I mean, and that's a $70 million plant. So we don't have any of these ideas flowing through here. We've just been avalanched with the project, which is a moving target. Most people in town don't even know what's going on. And this is wrong, and you're putting the burden on us. I mean, $300 a month water bill and sewer bill is going to be a burden on a lot of people. And it's going to be on your back because it doesn't have to happen that way. So I voted for you guys. Do the right thing. This isn't the right thing.
Thanks, David. Larry Truesdale, and then Jeff Heller.
Okay. actually been seeing a lot about back-of-the-envelope calculations, and these can be quite valuable. They work well when good figures are used as a starting point. When the minimum figure used in the lowest proposal was probably $50 million too high, that brings the question the value of this. Now, whose figures are right? I don't know, but I've heard a lot about costs. And quite frankly, if you take that $50 million, drop it down from 120 to 170 or 180 possibly, and then you subtract $50 million from the 215 vote that says we'll have $50 million sewage plant. That's Morro Bay's share of it. You're left with only 25 million, maybe 20 to 30. Now, the cost of capital for that is very different than the cost of capital for a $160 million facility or even a $120 million facility. Everyone has been worried about the cost of capital, as one should be. However, the comparison of those two is very different. It's actually quite intriguing that several of the council members have said they believe it should be in the $70 to $80 million range, and starting with these high numbers, they think the contractors will come down, and that's what they'll be. Well, that's about right for sewage treatment and water treatment. The bottom line is, though, anyone who starts at these high figures has no incentive to come down noticeably. They just don't. And we have excluded people who will build at the lower level to consider. It'd be nice if they were considered in the proposals and have them compete head-to-head with these international places and see who has the best proposal. We just didn't do that, and I think that means we're not going to get an affordable system. I think that's a shame. It will change the character of this town dramatically, forcing people to leave, and that is not the role of this government or even the Coastal Commission to re-engineer the makeup of towns, particularly on the coast. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Jeff Heller, and then Kerrigan Mann.
Jeff Heller, good evening. It's cold tonight. I want to commend you for the motion you made at the April 25th meeting asking staff to come back with a cost estimate for a sewer plant only. With numbers to compare for the reclamation piece as well, but what is the base price for the sewer plant? I read most of the RFP as much as I could understand, and before the meeting I also read the expert peer review panel report that came back to you as a result of your motion on April 25th, and I was amazed at, I kind of poo-pooed the whole thing, but in reading that again, the cost-saving suggestions there are really outstanding in my opinion. In reading the RFP, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, but it looks to me like it's asking for a proposal for what I call the whole enchilada, that it's asking not only for the sewer plant, but the recycled portion and the reclaimed portion and the IPR piece, basically what was originally in March was projected to be a $167 million project. I have no problem with that concept, but I think it would make some sense to maybe issue an addendum that would make the least expensive sewer plant option the base bid. And then all of the recycled and reclaimed components could be alternates so that when you look at the numbers, you really kind of know what you're getting for each piece. And then you can evaluate how important is each piece. If you're going to put a new plant out there, obviously it's got to be a sewer plant, but how much more do we want and can we afford? We've got great, great city goals, but the question is, can we afford the goals that you set a few years ago? So that would be my recommendation. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Kerrigan Mann. That's all I have for public comment slips, just in case there's anybody else who wants to speak.
Hi, good evening. Kerrigan Mann, Morro Bay resident. there's certainly nothing further I can add. Everybody who has spoken to you today and subsequently, they're all making really good sense. And I have to believe you're hearing this stuff. You know, with technology moving at such a pace, we certainly shouldn't even be thinking about the recycle aspect of things, because, you know, in two or three years, that might be half the price and a whole different system. I mean, we really should be thinking along those lines. Again, we don't have a project. I don't think there's any reason or any good reason we're even here for this special meeting, because I don't think this is where we should be. I think the project should be stopped in its entirety, rethought. I'd like to believe Cayucas is still a viable reality, and I think it is. I'd like the Hansen site to be looked at with a hard eye, and that includes coastal, and I'm not talking about coastal staff. These things have all been breezed over. I think we're at the worst location, and the, you know, 86ing these smaller companies like PERC makes no sense whatsoever. It just makes no sense. None of this is making any sense. I really feel very strongly that everything's out of order, and there's too many mixed messages and too much confusion, and this production should be shut down and rethought in its entirety. I mean, stopped. No more money spent. No more Nunley reports. No more. I think it's pretty obvious. I mean, these guys know what they're talking about. There's not one thing that's been said that I don't even see how it can be argued. Anyway, that's my two cents, as usual. Thanks.
Thanks, Kerrigan. Steve Stevens. Anybody else for public comment? I just received another public comment slip. None? Okay, thanks.
Hi, thanks, Steve Stevens. Very briefly, I'd love to get answers to some of these questions that Ken Green and others have asked of you. So frequently, citizens speak and questions go unanswered, ignored, and respectfully, I think it's your duty to respond to some of these questions. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve. Anybody else for public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. And in response to the last speaker, I'm looking for Rob in some of these comments and for questions, specifically whether or not some of the smaller outfits were excluded, to whether or not they were able to participate, and if you could respond to that.
The our request for qualifications set up some criteria for firms to apply. I guess the one that's been questioned the most is the $80 million example projects that the firms that were looking to be qualified needed to submit. That was based on our estimate of it being about an $89 million construction project. And in our view, we wanted firms with that order of magnitude experience to be proposing on a project of this magnitude. PERC Water had one of their construction partners that they've worked with before at the pre-proposal meeting. They chose not to propose on the project. Firms make business decisions all the time regarding what projects they're going to seek and what projects they're going not seek, whether what else is out there on the market, what risk is involved in working with a particular community. For example, we received
three statements of qualifications, and one of the submitters decided to back out based on other opportunities that they would rather pursue rather than the Morro Bay project. So it is a business decision that is made, we are not really typically purview to those business decisions on how they select which projects they're going to go after. The question regarding kind of the scope and scale of the project, is it a reclamation project? Is it a treatment plant only? Is it a secondary project? The motion that was quoted, I believe, was made at the meeting that we decided to do peer review on. Subsequent to that meeting, council gave direction to pursue a full reclamation project based on testimony from the regional board and staff talking about what components in a project qualify the project for subsidized funding. Mr. Alexander's comments about parsing the cost proposal into a water and wastewater section, while that makes sense to the city as they apportion that money to rates, I doubt if any of the contractors care which fund they're going to be paid out of. We can take that information from their proposals, and specifically when they submit their pay estimates and get detailed cost numbers for each portion of the project. Removing the demolition from the project, I think we could do. I think we could have it as a additive alternative so that we do get a price for the demolition, and then that would also allow us to decide whether we want to keep that in as a component or to bid that out separately. The question regarding technology advancing over time. It does. Yet we have, it takes a while to design and construct a water reclamation facility or any sophisticated component. You really do need to pick a point in time that you're settling on. That's not to say that as things improve that you wouldn't make improvements to your facility. We have a 63-year-old treatment plant out there that has been added on to, changed in various ways over the years. We have now a chlorine contact chamber that started out as a clarifier. So things change over time. I don't think it's a reason to stop the project and wait for the optimal point in time, because I don't know when that's going to be. When is the most optimal point in time that technology will be such that that we want to have water reclamation? The other point to add into that is we've been told by the regional board, by the state board, and by EPA that one of the components that will help us to secure subsidized funding is water reclamation. So I don't know that we, should we desire to continue with subsidized funding, that we have that opportunity to wait for some new technology on the market that I'm not sure what would be. For example, we talk about old technology for wastewater treatment plant. the biological treatment process has been around forever. There's nothing really changed with biological treatment. Maybe some of the components have changed. Blowers get improved efficiency, pumps more efficient, but the basic method that you use to treat wastewater biologically has not changed since the beginning of civil engineering. I think some of the other questions were repetitive on the ones that I've answered. If council has any further follow-up, I'd be happy to try to answer that.
Thanks, Rob. Anything from council on questions out there or any follow-up? Marlis?
Well, I would just, again, like to address Mr. Green's comments. He's referring to the meeting in April, and the direction was to have staff both convene a peer review panel, but also to bring back alternative costs for alternatives, considering that we might do just the phase one, which is the water reclamation, I mean the wastewater treatment first, followed by phase two. It's always been a two-phase project. And we did vote at a subsequent meeting, and I believe it was at your motion, John, to go with both of them at the same time. And the main reason was that in the intervening time period, we had received information that we were eligible for the pollution control grant, or a loan, I should say, and that was a low-interest loan, and that was a compelling reason for us to combine them. So that's the more complete history of the project.
All right, thank you. And with that, all right, thanks for that. And we can get started with our staff report. So, Rob, you're going to do the presentation on our staff report for this?
Yes, I'm going to walk through a PowerPoint presentation. We had copies for the audience.
Great.
You have copies up there.
All right, thanks,
so,
Rob.
That way everybody doesn't have to crane their necks over at the... Except for me, I don't think I can... Did I not turn something on? Ah, thank you. Okay. Thank you for that. Purpose this afternoon, early evening, is to present the draft RFP, to discuss areas of interest, to review comments and recommendations from the Citizens Advisory Committee, to collect the City Council's input, and to ultimately incorporate those changes into the request for proposal or RFP prior to the January 23rd City Council meeting. As we've often done before, we'll begin with project goals. Goals include costs, with an emphasis on minimizing ratepayer expenses, communications, communicating project progress, including general project status, milestones, budget to the community members regularly. Third goal, to produce tertiary disinfected wastewater in accordance with Title 22 requirements for unrestricted urban reuse. To design to produce reclaimed wastewater to augment the city's water supply, either in direct or indirect means, as described in the Master Water Reclamation Plan, and to maximize the funding opportunities. To include features of the project that maximize the city's opportunities to secure funding and maximize efficiencies. To design to minimize impacts from contaminants of emerging concern in the future, and to ensure compatibility with neighboring land uses. So a brief schedule. We presented the draft RFP to WRFCAC. We discussed it further with the WRFCAC at a special meeting on January 11th. we're having a city council study session regarding the RFP tonight. Propose that council review and schedule the release of the RFP next Tuesday, and then the prospective proposers will have about 3 months to put the proposal together, and those are due April 24th. A little background on the procurement, or how we're going to acquire these services for the project. And briefly, the project that we're talking about is a tertiary wastewater treatment plant followed by advanced oxidation and reverse osmosis that will ultimately lead to groundwater injection. This RFP process only is to secure the elements within the kind of the fence line of the WRF projects facility. We are procuring the lift station and force main by design bid build. So we have a designer that was awarded a contract. They're in the process of designing that lift station and force main routing, and that will go out to conventional bids. The reason why is we need to coordinate very closely with the alignment of that lift station, because there's environmental concerns with which direction we decide to go. It also, a project of that magnitude does lend itself to some of our local contracting force. We have quite a few general engineering contractors in the area that have experience building lift stations and force mains. As I said, the WRF project within the fence line is proposed to be design build. We are using the best practices from the Design Build Institute of America as general guidance, working with our city attorney on contractual issues. The we are using the section in the state's public contract, California Public Contracts Code, on design build procurement, which requires this two-stage process. And we made a presentation regarding the procurement methods to City Council at the latest on August 8th. The, as I said before, the procurement process is outlined in the Public Contracts Code and was codified there from SB 785 that gave design build authority to general law cities. The request for qualification was released on October 27th. Statements of qualifications were submitted to the city on December 7th, and four teams have submitted statements of qualifications to be considered by the city, although, as I mentioned before, one team has withdrawn or stated that they are going to withdraw, and I don't think we've received the formal letter yet. How do we specify what type of project that a design bid team will be building? There's a range of documents that can be prepared to give to prospective proposers to have them prepare the their guaranteed maximum price. So we've given, showing this graphic here, that on the left-hand side gives an arrow or triangle pointing upwards as to giving the range of risks to the city as far as cost risk, as it relates to the design of the project, and then cost, not cost of the project, but cost to prepare those documents. So if we just set out a we want a WRF that does advanced water treatment, and it needs to fit on a site on South Bay Boulevard with some other general parameters. That would be kind of at the low end. At the higher end, we've seen projects that almost go to full design before they send out their bridging documents, and that is a higher cost. We've selected a somewhere in the middle that gives performance criteria and sets up our preferences for materials, supplies, and sets standards for the bidding so everybody can bid on kind of a level playing field. The next steps in the procurement process are to complete and develop, distribute this RFP, request for proposals, to the shortlisted design build teams, or all of the design build teams. Their proposals will include a guaranteed maximum price and life cycle costs. We'll need to coordinate in-person meetings to discuss their design concepts, and then negotiate a final agreement in guaranteed maximum price with the top-ranked proposer. Reasons I say negotiate is there may be design concepts presented in the various proposals that we like but may not have been included with the lowest bidder, and we may want them to include some of those components in their project. So we would select based on the selection criteria and then negotiate that guaranteed maximum price with the proposer. The Water Reclamation Facilities Citizens Review Committee established a subcommittee to review the RFPs. We met with that review subcommittee on January 3rd. The committee members, of which two, I believe, are in the audience, Paul Donnelly and Valerie Leviolette, are here with us. Committee members agreed that all teams were qualified to perform the work. They also agreed that that we should request more information from the teams to address minor irregularities in the SOQs. Some of the teams didn't fill out the tables completely, although it was in elsewhere in their documents. All the teams have now submitted that those information to address those minor irregularities. We also worked with our city attorney to make sure that what we were asking were truly indeed minor. The committee subcommittee recommended issuing the RFP to all of the proposing teams. We had the opportunity to meet with the full Citizens Advisory Committee on January 4th and January 11th. The Citizens Advisory Committee recommended issuing the RFP to all of the proposing teams. The motion carried 5-1-3 with three members being absent. A motion was made to freeze all funding and expenses on the project. There was no second for that motion. On January 11th, we met with them further to discuss evaluation criteria, scoring, mitigation measures, allowance, and answered various questions. Uh, The general recommendation for this on scoring was to have the price proposal and life cycle costs be at least 60% of the total score. General agreement that the allowance of $1 million for unanticipated environmental mitigation measures was appropriate. One member had specific comments on mitigation measures and were forwarded on to our environmental staff to be addressed. And one member stated that the RFP should be null and void and the project re-examined. The design build entities that have submitted statements of qualifications are the four listed on the screen there. AECOM, WM Lyles as a joint venture, Phelons, Black & Veatch as a joint venture, Kiewit, Infrastructure West, Tetra Tech, and then Sunt Parsons as a joint venture. They have withdrawn from the process as one of the members of the team decided to pursue a different project. So Sunt withdrew. Parsons did ask if they could be maintained in the pool. We didn't feel that was fair to the other qualified submitters, as this was a major change to the project team. They would have to resubmit and reconfigure their team without rejecting all of the statements of qualifications and starting over. We felt that it was unfair to allow them to proceed. I'm going to move on to this document here, basically in talking about it in more of an outline format, and then we can get to specific questions. We also have team members from MKN here to answer specific technical questions. It's divided up into three main sections with several attachments to there, and the sections are some general information, the procurement process, and the documentation requirements. The attachments, the main one is the performance criteria report, which sets up those specifications, if you will, that we want each of the contractors to bid upon. We have the proposed contract documents that has been vetted with our city attorney. We have the instructions how to prepare the price proposal, a questionnaire form, sample proposal forms. We also will be including details for the federal requirements in the proposal. So there's because of the source of money that we're expecting to receive, the state revolving fund, which is basically federal dollars that have come through the state, and then the EPA money, we're required to have a American Steel and Iron clause in the contract, a disadvantaged business enterprise section in the contract, and then a prevailing wage or Davis-Bacon section in the contract. And then for the Davis-Bacon, 10 days prior to receiving those proposals, we will issue an addendum that updates what the prevailing wages are, and the contractors will be required to use the most recent prevailing wages in their proposals. Oh, excuse me, sorry. This slide, I'm not going to read you. Everybody has this in front of them. Read you this, what the scope of the on-site improvements are. But it basically includes everything within the fence line that you would need to operate a wastewater treatment plant with advanced water treatment for groundwater recharge. It does not include the pipelines nor the injection wells out at the injection site. The general information will include the background, the submission deadline, the schedule. What are the city's responsibilities are that the contractor has a right to rely upon information that the city provides them in preparation of their proposal, and how conflicts between the various code requirements will be resolved. We will have a pre-proposal conference. The deep design-build teams or design-build entities will have a timeline where they can submit questions. We'll have confidential individual meetings with the various design-build firms. And the confidentiality meetings allow the design-build firms to share their cost savings ideas before they put them to paper to see if their ideas that would garner support here at the city. And propose to have two meetings with each of the design-build firms. The design-build teams will provide their technical and price proposals. There will be an interview with each team, and the city will evaluate based on the scoring criteria that will be contained within the RFP. It'll be reviewed also by our WRFCAC, and they'll provide the recommendations to council, who will award a contract to a specific entity or choose not to, reject all bids, and start the process afresh. Again, here's some information that we'll be looking for in the technical proposal and the price proposal. The price proposal, I think, is what most folks will end up being interested in. It'll include a total cost plus with a guarantee not to exceed price. We'll have to see the cost plus proposal table listing all of the components. And then they'll have to do a life cycle cost analysis. Because not only will we want to know what the capital construction costs are, but what will it cost us to, this plant will be around for a while. And we want to know what it's going to cost us now and in the future to operate the facility. The meat of this document is the performance criteria report. It contains the general requirements, the design criteria of what we're looking for, a treatment process overview, standards for each of the treatment processes, and then the performance criteria for various components. The outline of the performance criteria report has various components in there, from the site civil to the piping to HVAC, and one that we've talked about earlier, the demolition and removal of the existing wastewater treatment plant. It also contains how they're going to start up the new facility, commission it, get it running, and then transfer operations to city staff. We continue to work on a draft site plan and coordinating with the design team on that. It'll show layout and desired adjacency of various facilities. Will require planning for solar panels, but not include the solar panels in the design build. We believe that it is more cost effective to procure that through a purchase power agreement to reduce capital costs. It'll identify required setbacks from the swales and perennial creeks on the property. It'll provide dimensions for the property and the easements. It'll show the preferred location on the overall property site. But the design build firms will be required to optimize that site plan. They will be doing the site planning, the site civil work, so preparing grading plans, building layouts, proposing where various components will exist on the site, or where they believe they should exist on the site. On first glance, this document may appear to be very prescriptive in what we want on this facility. Like I said, I believe it's middle of the road in the range of documents that could be prepared for design build. But the DD design build teams will need to express creativity that includes the treatment process. This criteria lays out the treatment process for an MBR facility. We've been talking a lot about our membrane batch reactor facility. We've been talking a lot about that in recent times. That's not the only way to achieve tertiary treatment. There are alternatives to that, and the design build entities will be allowed to submit alternative design process. They will use their creativity on the layout of the site. The floor plan, while we give an example floor plan of the operations and admin building, the design build firms will be allowed to use their creativity and make adjustments to that. We want the design builders to own the design for flows and loading, so they will need to confirm flow calculations both at the peak end and at the lower ends and size that flow equalization appropriately for final design. They will need to design stormwater management facilities and how site utilities. The alternative approval will follow a defined process on how the design and build entities can submit alternative processes and how they will be reviewed. This table shows the scoring criteria and weighting for the various components that we're looking at in the proposal. The first column gives the criterion or types of things that we'll be looking at. The second column is from the draft RFP, the weighting of each of those components. Third column is based on WRFCAC and staff input. As you can see, for example, on the price proposal lifecycle cost, that was WRFCAC recommended 60% for cost proposal. Staff felt that might a little bit too high. We gave a little bit more value to the technical proposal. So should council want to increase that item, and because we have a desire to have it add up to 100, because that's how we score things based on a 100-point scale, seems like, that we would need to reduce other components. For example, we might look at the price proposal life cycle costs at 60%, then the technical proposal could be 15%, and we would still end up with that 100-point scale. Because of the accelerated schedule with this process and trying to get to a guaranteed maximum price to inform our discussion on water and sewer rates, we don't have everything completed prior to issuing this RFP. If we were working more in a serial process, one step at a time, we perhaps would have our environmental document complete prior to going to RFP. So there is risk involved with the proposers not knowing perhaps every component that could be as a mitigation measure. I believe that we have a good idea what those are, but we're proposing to have a $1 million allowance that the city would have control over, and the proposers would, or the selected design build entity would have to submit justification as to why they should tap into that $1 million for these unforeseen conditions from the EIR. Additional mitigation measures are, we will perhaps be awarding a construction contract sometime, receiving RFPs in April, or proposals in April, awarding a contract sometime in August. There will be cost escalation before the contractor begins work, so there needs to be some process to apportion that cost escalation, because we are really starting this proposal process before we have complete funding and the environmental document. That concludes the presentation on the report. I would be happy to answer questions. I did receive some questions from council prior to the meeting that just finished up reviewing and have some answers to prior to this meeting. We can go over those, or I could take questions from council at your pleasure. We also, as I said, we also have technical representatives from MKN to take a deep dive into any technical questions that you might have.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. I just want to say thanks for putting the presentation in and the accelerated work process that we're engaged in and getting to this point. Any comments about Rob and responding to questions that were submitted prior, or do you want to jump into questions right away? Any comments from folks?
Well, I just want to say that I submitted a list of 20 questions, and I, rather than having Rob answer all of them, what I said to him was I may or may not ask all of them depending on the presentation, so I would prefer just asking them when it's my turn.
Okay, that's great. All right, and with that, I'll look to my left here. Red, would you mind starting us off for questions?
Sure. And I attended both of the WRFCAC meetings, and I was very, very happy with the way the WRFCAC folks looked at the proposal, and I really appreciated the second session when you concentrated on the criteria and identified the cost as the elephant in the room. That's the biggest thing that we're looking at. And my question does have to do with the criteria, Rob. The technical proposal criterion, you attach a fair amount of importance to that, But when I look at the RFP pages, the technical proposal seems to consist of all of those criteria that are listed above it. We start with technical proposal is 3.4, and then under that is 3.4.1, which is the management approach, and then point two is the schedule and or the quality and so on. So what is the technical proposal? How does it differ from the criteria that are part of the technical proposal?
Looking, the technical proposal is more of the how the team puts together the engineering portion of their proposal. So it'll have what is their proposed process flow diagrams, the hydraulic profile, their electrical design, how they've sized processes and equipment capacities, looking at what their projected influent and effluent quality are, what major equipment they're proposing in the plant, looking at their site plan layout, and the performance guarantees.
Okay, then on page 3-6 of the RFP, where it says 3.4.7 proposed design, that then is the technical proposal?
I'm sorry, you gave me a page number. I must have misheard because
yeah. 3-6.
Are you in 3? Are you in 3-6 of?
I don't know where I am.
What tab is it behind? I guess is the question.
It's not behind a tab.
Okay.
It's right at the beginning.
Okay. All right, guys. Thanks.
My page 3-6 is more of the detail on discussing some of the building aspects. So. Yeah. Sorry, wrong 3-6.
Oh, this should have been paginated.
Yes. Sorry. Didn't notice that there was two page 3-6s in this document.
It bothers me that when we list technical proposal as one of the criteria, it actually, the actual definition of it comes under proposed design. Proposed design. So let me start on page 3-2, near the top. It says 3.4 technical proposal. And then under technical proposal, then we go through management approach, quality controls, cost controls, collaboration, design, sequencing, and scheduling. Then the next listed criterion after that is technical proposal, which seems to be just a repetition of what we already said. But what you told me, the actual technical proposal, is what is described in the RFP as proposed design under 3.4.7.
We'll make a clarification of that so that everybody's clear on what we're referring to. Thank you.
Okay. Then I'm okay.
Okay. Great, Red. Thanks, Matt.
Sure. Rob, in terms of looking at your presentation, when you talk about the design, build, creativity, when you say that, is that a standard term? And will these teams be looking at, I guess, the whole proposal evaluation criteria? And is that where creativity comes into it, or is that just a technical concept of creativity?
So while this document is thick and has a lot of words in it and a lot of requirements, it doesn't really lay out how you would build a water reclamation facility. So the design-build team will need to put together their engineering teams and lay out and design this facility. That is creativity. They also will look at, if I was on one of these design build firms, and I've been on that side of the counter before, I would look at some of the requirements in here and ask myself, can I do it better and cheaper than what they are looking for, which will give me a better price and an advantage over my competitor.
I guess that's my next question. Knowing that we have our draft FMP going on right now in terms of looking at the totality of the project, this design, these design bid, design bid and build teams will look at that, but also look at the criteria that we've already established and then try to meld those two together and then, as you say, build a plant?
Yes.
Got it. Next, how damaging is the weight for the EIR as we get, or limiting, damaging, I don't want to be overly negative.
How many unknowns are there out there?
Well, no, I don't know if you, because you're not going to be able to quantify that. But at this process of the EIR, knowing that what do we have until March for it to come back to us? I think that was it, March.
The draft EIR, yes.
And I guess I hate to hand this to you in such a general way, is how limiting or damaging can not having that EIR at this stage of the game be?
The we feel, we understand that two of the three things that will probably make the most difference in the EIR for plant construction will be geotechnical, so for foundation design, biological impacts, and cultural impacts. All three of those studies have already been completed for this site. We are doing more in-depth cultural resources, especially for the pipeline alignment. But those are the aspects that could require, that may not be fully known until a final EIR. But we have initial information. We feel that we can predict mitigation measures, but there still will be unknowns. And one way to mitigate the risk of those unknowns is to create an allowance that the bidders or proposers can look at that mitigate some of their risk, and they can lower prices on other components so that they know they have some funds to draw upon should there be mitigation measures that they will need to satisfy. Now, this process does not give them carte blanche to $1 million. It's not an extra on the, we don't just add $1 million to their proposal. They have to justify the use of that and explain to us why it wasn't how it wasn't included in their price proposal and how much they need to use of that to mitigate, and we'll have to make that decision on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, I guess that begs another question for me. In terms of going for this lift station bid and the pipeline bid, are we going to be doing these three projects simultaneously, and will those three entities that are eventually awarded these contracts, will they have periodic meetings where they discuss what's going on, and how will that work in this creativity?
Yes, we'll have to have coordination meetings between the various contractors, because at some point in time we'll have to drive that golden spike and everything will need to meet up at the fence line, the force main, effluent line will need to connect to the treatment plant, so we will have those coordination meetings. The reuse line will need to come from the treatment plant and make it out to those injection wells.
No, I get that. I understand that. But in terms of the creativity of this plant, in terms of working with those two other parts of the project, in terms of making this the most cost-effective and creative part of it, they will be just that'll be part of the process where they meet and then discuss, and then that proprietary information. I guess when they're awarded the contract, they don't necessarily worry about propriety anymore. They'll just be working with them and expressing what their needs are to build such a plant.
Correct.
Got it. Okay, that's it for now. Thank you.
All right, Matt, thanks. John, then Marlos.
Thank you, Mayor. Thanks, Rob, again, for the presentation and all of the staff that was behind helping you prepare that as well.
Yeah, this isn't my work.
You take no claim. More responsibility.
I have review. I have approval requirements as city engineer, but it took a team to put this together. It's I'm not an expert in electrical or instrumentation, mechanical processes. It takes mechanical engineers, instrumentation engineers, process engineers to put these specifications together.
That's why I wanted to thank them as well as you and make sure that they heard us say thank you for all of the assistance, because it takes a village, I think, to do an RFP for a wastewater treatment facility and water reclamation facility.
It truly does.
Good. Okay, well, moving on. Just want to follow up to Councilman Makowiecki's comments, because for me, and it sounds like for him, they're critical. My sense is the DB, design, build, team creativity, correct me if I'm wrong, is exactly what you've outlined on page 2-1 in the front section before you get to any tab, under 2.3, which is titled Alternative Technical or Management Concepts, or ATMCs. Am I correct that those are one in the same?
That is part of it. There's also some built-in creativity, for example, site layout. You don't really need to submit for review. Mike can correct me if I'm wrong, but for example, with site layout, we're not looking to use the alternative process to evaluate that type of creativity. This is more, we have X Acme blower. That we think is the best blower in the world. They will propose Y blower because it's much more efficient, cost-effective, and easier to maintain. Those are the types of things that we'll be looking at for alternative submittals.
But it kind of goes on all the way through 2.3.6 and identifies a number of issues that would allow them to have creative license, so to speak, with regard to the project and its components. Am I correct?
Yes.
I guess we're both asking you know, it appears to the community and to us maybe, or to myself, as being overly prescriptive, but I think we've echoed a number of times the idea that alternative components, pieces, processes, et cetera, that might achieve the same end line goal that we've established are welcome, and if they're less costly, hopefully they are, that's the idea, they're going to be incorporated into the consideration.
Yes. So we've given example manufacturers in a lot of cases, mainly to reflect what types of quality that we're looking for or the type of operation that it is. So we'd be looking for something equivalent to that particular manufacturer. And I'm sorry, the only thing that keeps popping in my head is blowers for some reason.
Minor cost. Okay. Fair enough. Then my next question has to do with the scoring grid on the draft RFQ, or RFP, I should say. Pardon me. And I'm not going off of your presentation. I'll just go off of that because I based my question on that.
Okay.
I understand you've changed the weighting, but here's a couple of questions about that. One, remind me who's involved in doing the scoring. Who's on the team? Remind us, the audience.
So right now it's the technical team, so MKN. I'm hoping that we'll have a new program manager by the time we look at scoring these, so they would be a member of the team. We will have our WRFCAC subcommittee as a member of the scoring team and city staff.
And who from city staff?
Myself and Joe Miller.
Excuse me, and if I could offer a quick clarification.
Sure.
Our role has primarily been, when we've been part of the evaluation, we've not had a voting role. We've just been technical support, helped put materials together for the review committee. So we haven't voted on the past selections. So I just wanted to clarify that since we're a consultant.
Sure, totally understand it. I guess I'm just trying to understand who will be summarizing and voting on this, and so that the public knows what team members from the various disciplines will be involved in recommending a decision to the council. And so
it'll be myself, Public Works Director, our Utilities Manager, Joe Miller. I was reminded by the gentleman to my right, the City Manager, will have an influence on that.
Thought there might be.
And your new Program Manager will likely sit on that team, along with our WRFCAC Review Committee, which is composed of Steve Shively, Paul Donnelly, and Valerie Lefegulet.
Got it. Along those lines, would it be advantageous to have the finance director on the team, since we're moving towards cost as a major parameter? Just throwing it out.
Yes.
As a maybe an addition, so for you to think about.
We'll give her the blowers to evaluate.
Sure. Yeah. Right. Exactly. The next question would be if I were on the team. And having been on teams that have done this before, and I was going to evaluate, I'll just pick management approach, which has a weighting, at least here, of 5. Is it my feeling, or is there a grid that is weighted that allows us to utilize that, or would allow us to utilize that in making the decision? Or am I just arbitrarily, based upon what I heard, giving it a 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 score?
We'll have each of these items, as I listed the one for technical proposal in the past, management approach also is made up of several components that will have to be evaluated, things like the understanding of the project goals, the understanding of the challenges and mitigation strategies, how they register risk and mitigation strategies, their unique approaches to strength, resources of the team and members, and management strategies for their sub-consultants and subcontractors. So underneath there, we'll have a listing of components that make up management approach that will all also need to be ranked. Now, what we're proposing on management approach is 4, so there may be 1 point assigned to each one of those. So it's if it's a 1 point score, it's kind of a you achieve it or you don't achieve it. So each of these components will have discrete evaluation criteria that we will prepare and give to the team to assist them in review, rather than rely on, oh, it's my feeling that these guys can do a good job, so and they're the lowest cost. We really need to have more discrete description than that when we're evaluating these proposals, although, you know, using
concrete,
excuse me,
concrete or did
concrete,
you, not discrete, right?
Okay. Yes. Sorry.
That's okay. Just wanted to make sure that I heard right.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I guess what I'm used to is a weighted weighting of the weighted measures. And so just thinking about it, for instance, you know, taking, I'll just take a different category. Let's say price and proposal at 20. Possible score. I'm using the old grid.
Right.
On the page 2.4. If the team used a 1 to 5 rating system and 5 indicated that it fully meets this parameter, 4 indicated that it meets with minor gaps, 3 indicates that it meets with moderate gaps, 2 would indicate it meets with significant gaps, and then a 1 would be it doesn't meet. That helps it become more objective as opposed to subjective.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering if that could be a consideration, maybe a consideration in how you use this tool.
I think the committee would appreciate that, having that suggestion, because not having discrete criteria makes it very difficult to objectively score each one of these items, although cost is probably the easiest
right.
to score.
Right, exactly. And so, good. And I'm happy to share that. There are a number of other ones out there.
Okay.
But our statistician to the right may have better ideas. Thanks for that. So maybe a macro question. If I asked you, in what ways does this RFP allow for the realization of City Council goal number 1, how might you respond to that?
So goal number 1 is cost effectiveness. We want the lowest price project that achieves the rest of the goals.
You got it. Yeah. So how does this RFP allow us to maximize the realization, really, of each of the goals in general? And I don't want you to be real specific, but obviously the goals drive everything that we do, and I'm just wondering what your thought would be in answering that question.
So a lot of the goals are performance-based goals. Supply reclaimed water that is suitable for direct or indirect potable reuse. That we will have to basically give them direction on how they will satisfy that goal. You will build a tertiary wastewater treatment plant followed by AOP, advanced oxidation, and reverse osmosis. Sorry. The goal for costs is achieved in several different ways through this RFP process. First of all, we're using a competitive process. We're using the market to drive costs. These now three firms will be competing against each other, and if council were to follow WRFCAC's recommendation and costs being the driver on selection, being if it were 60% of the evaluation criteria, these firms will have to work very hard in preparing the lowest cost project that meets all those goals. The creativity allowed in the design allows, we may have specified some piece of equipment that one of the design builders views as being, I'll use a common expression, a Cadillac versus a Toyota or whatever cars you want to pick, that this alternative piece of equipment will meet the city's needs, will perform at the life cycle costs that we're looking for, may have some drawbacks to it, but can we live with those drawbacks and meet some of the higher criteria in the council goals? So I think those are two ways that this RFP process meets the cost goal. The other goals, I think, are driven by us in telling the proposers what we want from them as part of the process.
And thanks for that, because, you know, the goals, the overall council goals drive the project, and I really think that you've done a great job as a team in maximizing the realization of those goals by the way that you have done this. And so I'm glad to hear you articulate it and clarify it, at least for me and the audience especially. And then you mentioned again, and I think it's an important point for the community, and I'll just ask the general question, what validation of our scope will the typical respondent do in determining their responses? And that's very general. You gave an example about flows that they will probably internally, as their own team, evaluate flows. They may, and now I'm adding my thoughts, they may come up with numbers that might be lower than ours, and through their justification propose a plant that meets their re-justified information. Is that how it works? I'm just trying to get an understanding of that validation process of the scope.
There are other components to that make up the requirements for flows. We will have to satisfy regulatory requirements. We've picked on average daily flows an awful lot. Average daily flows aren't used an awful lot in wastewater treatment plant design. There's nothing really average on a day-to-day or minute-by-minute basis. So you design different components based on different flow regimes. The equalization basin, using that example, is peak hour. It has to be able to hold back all those flows from that make it into our system, either through wastewater or stormwater that infiltrates or inflows into the system, and we have no option. We cannot overflow a treatment plant. That is, you don't design them to only work 360 days out of the year. They work 365 days out of the year, and you design them for your maximum peaks. Other components aren't based on flow. The biological treatment will be based on mass loading or the amount of solids that biological components that make it into the system. So they'll be looking at all those components that we've evaluated in the facilities master plan, confirming those, because that process civil engineer will be placing his stamp on that design, and I will be placing my stamp approving that for construction. So we want to be absolutely sure that this is the facility that works 365 days a year. not 360.
And I'll apologize for using that as the example because I really wasn't trying to get back at that again. I'm satisfied. What I meant, and I wanted to hear your full explanation, but it sounds to me like there's a fair amount of revalidating of scope issues that are in here.
Correct.
Outlined by the proposed bidders.
Because they will own the design.
Okay.
They're... civil engineer in charge will be responsible for stamping those drawings.
Great. And I should have asked it like that rather than, because you gave the example earlier and I just used it, but it really wasn't a flow question. It was a general question about revalidation. Thanks. Could you outline the proposed administrative component of the project in the RFP and tell me how you did the analysis to justify the sizing of that on a cost offset basis, or has that been done? In other words, what I'm asking is based upon the scope that we've outlined for admin services within the RFP, has there been done internally some analysis to indicate if we don't move it to this site, it could be potentially more costly? To leave some of the functions or services, or is that something that hasn't yet
It hasn't been done. We haven't completed that work. We're looking at the architecture team is preparing some costs for leaving components of the utility division at the existing corp yard and wastewater treatment plant, and they're looking at those building structures because there's some code issues with those buildings and determining what those costs will be. We have not quite completed that work yet, but we'll have it very shortly, hopefully before the council meeting, and be able to provide you with that information.
And then a decision could be made on the appropriateness of the sizing of that based upon your case analysis.
Correct.
Of our existing site and not moving it. Great.
I guess worst case would be council authorizes release of the RFP and we don't have the answer yet. We would issue an addendum to say downsize the admin building to accommodate two workers or keep it the same or downsize it to accommodate five staff members. So we have that flexibility through the process to issue addendum to the RFP.
Perfect. Thank you. And just two more simple questions. I personally have met with our new neighbor-to-be on South Bay Boulevard site. And I'm wondering if, given the current site plan and the access road and the specs that are in there, if we have recently discussed that with our neighbor who has had a number of concerns and echoed those to the council, and if not, what is our plan to ensure that we have reached out appropriately and done that and then included that? Those concerns, or at least address those concerns in the scope of the project.
We will need to complete that draft site plan layout, which we have not done yet. I know there's been concern with screening of the site from that neighbor. Now that screening does come at cost, so we will need to evaluate that cost. So once we complete that, we'll need to reach out to that property owner, show him the site plan, and then we will need to make a decision whether how far we want to go in addressing those concerns. That is not, for example, if you weren't satisfied with what the level of screening or setbacks that the city was proposing to do, there is a permitting process that we're going through with the property is outside the city limits and in the county. As with all development projects, they are subject to public hearing and will be addressed through that process. We are hoping that to avoid any disputes and to satisfy to the maximum extent possible, we can all those concerns.
Great. Thank you. And my last question, What happens if all bids are rejected?
We start over with the SOQ process. Really, I think it's not quite as simple as that, because I think at that point in time we've probably missed deadlines for WIFIA. We'll need to reevaluate council goals, look at other types of funding methods, and I think that's it. We really need to reevaluate the process. I believe that it won't come to that. After talking with the design build teams informally before we started the process, all of them believe that this project can be delivered for a cost-effective price. Now, they wouldn't tell me what they thought that price was going to be, but they believe that while the contingencies are appropriate for this point where we're in the project, they thought they could deliver the project for less than we're thinking it will be.
Thanks, Rob, very much for the answers to the questions. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John. Marlis?
Yeah. Well, thank you all for the RFP, and I also attended the WRFCAC meetings and was very appreciative of them and their thoughtful comments on the RFP and the evaluation criteria. I'm just going to start by following. I won't ask all 20 questions. I'm going to follow up, though, on your last question, because I had a very similar one, and that was, we've got a three-month period here where they're developing the bids. Do we have some confidence that if some others drop out, they'll let us know that? What if we only get one bid? Obviously, then it's the lowest and it's the only bid. So.
And then council will need to make a decision whether they reject that
right.
and start over or
right.
whether it's acceptable.
Is it possible to find out if they would do that?
These are professional firms. I think they will tell us as soon as they know that they're not going to pursue the project. They have reputations to maintain. They need to keep that professional reputation high. We will also be having meetings with them through the proposal process to discuss their what they're thinking for some of their cost savings ideas. So we'll have indications through those meetings. But I don't think it'll get to that. I don't think we'll have to glean anything out of the proposals. I think they will immediately come to us and let us know. I would assume that that decision will be made fairly early in the proposal process, that a team is not going to embark upon a costly proposal preparation and then stop.
All right. And I would, we've mentioned creativity here, and we're trying to encourage alternative approaches and creative approaches and cost-saving approaches. And I just want to follow up on how that would work in this bidding process. If one of the teams has, and it doesn't meet our pretty prescriptive, as I've told you, performance standards in here, how do they communicate that to you, and then how do you communicate that to the other team so that it's a fair process?
So they will have confidential meetings with the city to discuss these cost savings ideas or changes. We don't share that information with the other teams. Because it is a competitive bid process. So I come up, this is in the bidding process.
Right.
So I come up with an idea that saves $50 million over the course of the, over the project costs. I don't want you to share that with my competitors, to tell them how to save $50 million too. Now, Mike's going to correct me if I'm wrong. He's going to come up to the mic if I'm wrong here. After the bid process, if a team takes a stipend, we can take that creative idea, let's say they weren't the lowest, and share it with the successful proposer and tell them we want them to incorporate that cost savings idea into their proposal and give us a cost for that.
I guess my concern is that in being so prescriptive in the performance standards, if they aren't going to, they're going to have to somehow justify that even though it may not be exactly what you prescribed, it's a better approach, they're going to have to convince you of that. I was really concerned by how prescriptive the standards were. And that concerned me in terms of really not getting the kind of alternative creative approaches we might want.
So we need to set a level of quality. We want this plant to last for a long time. That plays into the cost to the ratepayer, is life cycle cost. If we're having to replace pumps, membranes, valves, blowers, that is a, while it may be a lower capital cost, it will cost the ratepayer more in the long run if we're replacing those components. So we've set manufacturers and performance requirements to set that level of quality that we're looking for.
Okay.
We can evaluate a lower level of quality, and we will, it will not just be me, it won't be Joe, it won't be just the city manager, it will be a team approach, it will be citizens from our WRFCAC that will be looking at this, and ultimately we will be relaying this information to city council for you to make the final decision on which proposal that you want to evaluate or want to award.
And I'd like to get back to whether or not we would be considering alternative treatment approaches in this RFP, because it seems to me, in my reading of this, and I'm not an engineer, so I have to state that up front, that we are basically suggesting that by approving this or sending this out, we are going with MBR technology.
That's our basis for the proposal. Any treatment method that satisfies the quality, effluent quality, and ultimate reuse of the water could be proposed. MBR is one way to do it. In my view, it's probably the most cost-effective, given that we're going for a groundwater recharge. One of the teams may suggest that conventional activated sludge followed by a separate membrane treatment would be more cost-effective and provide that equal treatment. I think it does provide that equal treatment. I just don't think it's as cost-effective approach, but I can be convinced, and I think the rest of the team members would be convinced.
Excuse me, and if I could add one quick clarification too. The way that I think council would want to view this is you're not selecting a technology until a proposal comes back to you that you review and approve to implement a project. So if you approve issuance of the RFP, you're approving issuance of an RFP and solicitation of proposals. And those proposals will have different treatment concepts. Some may be along the lines of what we've, some may be very close to what we've proposed. Some may be quite different, but the proposers can demonstrate that it has smaller footprint, lower life cycle cost, lower cost overall. It's been demonstrated to be successful in areas. So I would say you would not be, council would not be approving any treatment technology until you're looking at a final proposal after the solicitation process is done.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Well, I'm looking at page 1-5, engineering and design activities, and I'm seeing membrane bioreactor, and the lead would be the, I'm just wondering, that to me suggests that you are implying that that's but again, I'm not an engineer.
Are you speaking to 1-5 in the RFP or in the performance criteria report?
Where are you at?
What is that? Performance?
In the performance criteria
performance
report.
Criteria report.
So in the performance criteria.
Right, right. And so, yes, and it the design or the performance criteria report is based around an MBR process, but that alternative treatment concept section in the RFP is critical for everything in that performance criteria report.
And do you think that these firms all understand that?
Yeah, they'll understand that. They're familiar with the terminology and with how these are approached.
Okay.
And that's part of, too, part of what's important to us is that pre-proposal meeting we have with those proposers is to convey, you know, verbally what we've put in there in writing and to bring forth those key points for them.
And so we certainly can ask that you put the council goals in here because I notice that they are not in here. And if we want them to meet the council's objectives, the goals need to be up front and center in this document.
Yes, that's a simple change to do.
Okay. And another question, have all of the cost savings proposed by the peer review been incorporated into this document?
Yes.
Okay. And could you explain how, once you have, if you have the highest ranked bidder, how you are, what you're going to negotiate with or on after that, or what, why you would negotiate?
So the example that I gave earlier was taking a component from one proposer and adding it to the other. This what the apparent low bidder or successful proposer has in it. You would need to negotiate because they may not have considered that option. They will need to go back and cost that out and provide us a proposal for that. If we're satisfied with their base bid, we don't want to change anything. Again, Mike will jump up and correct me if I'm wrong. There's no reason to negotiate anything with that. We have their guaranteed maximum price.
Okay. And just to address Mr. Alexander's comments, would it be possible for them to separate out the costs for the wastewater treatment plant versus the recycling reuse component of the project?
We would have to give them that information to separate it out, and I don't see what value it is to the bidders to understand what components are wastewater and what components are water. It will not affect their bid because, but we can take their bid information and separate it out into water and wastewater components so that it's charged appropriately.
And we will be doing that.
And we have to do that.
We have to do that. Okay. And so just getting back to this prescriptive nature, which I know I thought we were too prescriptive, can you tell me why we are including in here such a large facility for the operations and why we are asking this bidder to buy the furniture and in the residential portion of the building?
So in the more of the office area.
Right,
and
office and microwave and refrigerator and stove. And aren't those, that seems to me beyond asking them to build a facility.
It's fairly typical with this type of procurement that you have that supplied. I was involved in a project in San Luis Obispo where some of the office supplies were provided by the contractor. Some the city decided to procure on their own because they wanted some specific, believe it or not, office chairs that they wanted to make sure that they got that. The fire station here in Morro Bay, the contractor provided the stove, refrigerator, all of the most of the components in there. The city procured HVAC components because it was not allowed in the Buy America clauses of that contract.
Well, if it's part of their bid, wouldn't it? Is there any markup that they're charging on that, or at least their profit would be based on the total contract? So it seems to me that if we're trying to keep costs down, we'd be better off doing that ourselves.
It may or not be cost advantageous to us whether we could purchase at a local vendor an office supplies cheaper than the contractor can.
Okay. And I noticed there was some discussion at WRFCAC about the SCADA analysis, and that is not included, is that correct, in this contract?
So we are working on procuring a SCADA system master plan designer. So we will provide the design build contractor with a master plan as to how the SCADA or the control systems for the plant need to communicate, what types of controllers that we want. But as part of the proposal, they would be providing that equipment. So we are not SCADA design experts, and we want similar equipment not just at the wastewater plant, but to operate our water system. We don't want to have disparate systems that are difficult and costly to maintain. And we have limited resources, so if we can have one manufacturer of control modules, it makes it simpler and less expensive for us to facilitate those repairs.
And do you have any kind of an estimate of how much that plan is going to cost? This additional contract?
Proposals that we receive range from in the neighborhood of about $63,000 to $75,000. So we'll be conducting those interviews on Friday and then negotiating a final contract with the successful proposer.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for all the questions from everyone. Rob, back to the proposal and the evaluation criteria. Not to belabor that too much, but just two quick questions. I know on the schedule and cost controls and project sequencing scheduling, there are some minor differences between those categories, but schedule, both have scheduling, and scheduling has a high degree of effect on cost. Could you talk a little bit more about, if I'm looking at the criteria here, I'm looking at the revised score to the right. So for the schedule and cost controls, that's been adjusted to 10, and then the sequencing and scheduling is down to 2. I'm relying on your on the team's professional input on, and WRFCAC, you know, technical, evaluation on this as well. But I intuitively am looking at scheduling as being very, very important. And maybe you can elaborate a little bit on those two, other than what I've read in the report.
Sure, sure. So project sequencing and scheduling relates their assumptions on the schedule, their specific details on the schedule, their ability to meet the completion date and promote efficiency, their approach to scheduling, construction sequencing, and to identify challenges in the schedule and the methods to address those. Schedule and cost control will be their approach to budgeting and reporting, their management change control process, their risk management processes, cash flow reporting and basis, plan for tracking and correctly billing for our grants and loans, and their document control system and their ability to ensure compatibility with our city, with our construction management Procore system. So based on WRFCAC's desire to increase costs, something had to give to keep the relative ratios in line with increasing the importance of costs.
Aside from that, just those two categories together and the importance of scheduling overall, and I know it's in the report and read that as far as what the differentiation between those, but just wanted to just have some sort of a more elaboration on the ranking of, you know, project scheduling versus the cost controls and schedule and the differentiation and why one was rated more over the other.
And we had also talked about perhaps combining those two into one category so that it'd be all rated together. That's also a potential to look at, is combine the schedule and scheduling cost controls into one category.
And so given that discussion and the discussion we're having right now, what would lead you other, and I wouldn't necessarily get into the conversation in a high degree of being an expert on what I would want to be rated higher than the other, but I'm just looking for input on why we might want to combine those or how those for me it's just a matter of we just want to have a good proposal out there, and we, I know there's going to be waiting on this, so it's more for how we are going to evaluate this than anything else. So I'm just asking the question.
So we viewed as the schedule and cost control as higher because, as you said, controlling the schedule can drive costs. Also, it involves the management of the change order process. And change orders also can drive costs. So that was viewed more important than the development of the schedule and the sequencing of particular individual components. So making sure that you maintain that schedule and that you have methodologies to control costs, we view as more important than development of the schedule.
And I guess the other question specifically to those two items is how that lays out for other proposals. So regardless of the companies that are proposing, but the standardization of this, what the bidders have experience in being able to dial in how their proposal, when they look at this criteria, how they'll be able to fit into that. Are we asking too much that's just not with industry standards out there, or is it in the sweet spot?
I think it's appropriate for this project. I think the teams that we have are contractor-led teams. I think they would. Some of them might be happy if we only had one criteria to evaluate their proposals, and that was cost, and not have to deal with some of these other components on here. The hard bid contractors that are bidding on jobs, they're more they're not used to having to comply with some of these others, where an engineering-led team might want costs to be the lowest evaluation, and we need to just evaluate how that they would design and build this, and they're going to give us the best product that meets the needs, perhaps not the lowest cost product. I think it reflects a difference in philosophy and law regarding how you procure professional engineering services as opposed to how you bid a construction project. And what we're doing here is blending those two processes together with design build. I think it is appropriate, for especially for the teams that we're looking at, to have a high emphasis on cost.
Okay. One final question. Page 2-5, the very bottom of 2.10, where it says questions, clarifications, and concerns. I'll read it for you. And it says, any communications initiated by a design build team with the city, city's representatives, and or project stakeholders other than via email with Mr. Livick about the water reclamation facility may result in disqualification. All communications shall be directed to Rob Livick. Can you talk a little bit about that? And for council members contacted by any one of these bidders, would that interaction disqualify them?
It could. So we've worked with our city attorney on this, and we're trying to avoid bid protests, mitigate risk on bid protests, where a proposer might have talked to a council person and receive some information that is not purveyed to other proposers. That could be a reason to protest the bid and basically cause litigation over the project. We had similar statements in, as you might remember, in the statement of qualifications document, where all communications, it also ensures that questions get responded to all of the proposers, not just one of them.
Okay. So does that have to do with community members and groups as well?
It does. We cannot control what community members do and ask contractors. We're just asking the contractors not to initiate that conversation.
So to speak about this publicly, though it's in the contract, if there was some outreach, the expectation would be for the bidders to educate whoever the person is contacting them about this process, and we would understand that.
And I think to just, you know, inform us that we had this question or we had this contact, and maybe you should answer it rather than us answering it.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that. I'm just from that, we can shift into discussion points, and I was going to lead off in some of the discussion points and some of the direction at this point and then go from there. First, I did want to make some comments about the specifics for the RFP. I know there's been some comments on that, though I wouldn't say I have experience on this type of project per se, but in past experiences and bidding projects like this, I actually appreciated the specifics that were in here. I think it's good to have the base. You want to know what those the base products are in there, and I imagine the team discussed that. And I know there are some, you know, whether it's Joe saying, hey, this is a product that we have experience, this is a product that we have that's good, and this is a product that doesn't have value for us, and we've had bad experience. So, and that actually, by having those specifics in there, gives a level playing field for all the bidders. So they know that, hey, this is the baseline, this is what we're going to be bidding on. So to some degree, the specifics may have been viewed as being too specific, but I think it's, in general, a good baseline. It doesn't mean, from my small experience and some of the industrial bidding that I have experience in, that there wouldn't be suggestions on a product or criteria that might be beneficial. And, you know, I expect that that's what the bidders would do. So I just wanted to respond to that. So that's good. And then I'll just go down the list of items that I wanted to ask for details on. Specifically in the introduction portion of the RFP, as I look to the performance criteria, let me just flip to it. And this was discussed by Marlis as well when we met with you, Rob, when we talk about this. I would think in the introduction, page 1-1, the overview, that would be a good place to have the adopted goals by council and some background in there. As the bidders are looking at the water reclamation facility master plan, there are goals that are part of that facility master plan. We've adopted a more specific set of goals, and I think we need to have those specific goals that we adopted in the overview with some language in there that delineates how we got to that. And I'd like to see that in there. Also, in the demo, I know that was discussed, and have some similar concerns. I would ask that we keep the demo portion of that in there, but the demo could be, that'll give us an opportunity to know what a bid would look like for a demo. But that doesn't necessarily exclude the city to bidding that out at a later date. I think we can do that. We've talked about identifying the creative solutions to reduce costs, and I think we feel comfortable that language is in there. I would also, even though I did have some remarks that I appreciated having the specifics in there, there's one specific that I would like to have removed, and that's particularly the admin and operations building. I think we could just put in the specifics of what the requirements are. If you look at the operations and maintenance building, I think that is too specific in that just lay out the language and what is required for the team and the operations team and let them build that under the goals. I think we can achieve that.
I just want to remind you that we owe you an analysis of, Councilman Hedding pointed out, the evaluation of what staffing makes sense to have at which location. So we'll be providing that also. And I think that'll feed into what the ultimate performance criteria is for that admin building.
Okay.
Because it's going to be different if there's 2 versus 16 there.
Okay. The other item I have on here, Councilmember Hedding commented on, and I think I alluded to this comment in previous discussions, particularly to landscape, and that would be some sort of enhanced ag buffer around the project, particularly in light of, I think, the neighbor he was speaking to is Mr. Mano, and just to integrate into that compatibility factor within the neighborhood. And then lastly, risk. The project overall and how we delineate, as a city, delineate some of the risks. If a lot of the risk is shifted onto the design bid builder, then that could also affect the overall cost. And if there was a shared risk in the project, that could reduce the cost overall. I don't know how to describe that per se, but I would like to have some information, and maybe in between now and Tuesday I can learn a little bit more about that. But how we can affect this RFP to where if we are entertaining creative solutions, that if we understand what the risk is, and it means that we're carrying a little bit of that risk, are we willing to take that if that's a way to reduce the cost overall? And we'd be able to weigh that risk. I think those are all the comments I have for input. And then I'll take some notes as we're all talking through that. And then we need to get some confirmation that these discussion points that we're moving forward, that we agree to all those. And we also need to conclude that, are we going to see these back on Tuesday, or and get some feedback from you all that we'll be able to get this much of the RFP done for Tuesday, and then we may have addendums. And so I'll just take notes as we're going through this, and we'll close the loop on that at the end.
Mr. Mayor, just a suggestion for how we proceed with next Tuesday is we'll get the list of items. Don't propose on reprinting the RFP for distribution, but we would have a table as to the item and how it's addressed and what page it would be addressed in the RFP.
Okay. All right. Sounds great. With that, I'll turn to my left, and Mr. Davis, you can start us off. Thanks.
Thank you. And I want to say again that I appreciate that Paul and Valerie came here tonight to watch us in action. And the third member of their subcommittee, Mr. Shively, started off the discussion last Thursday with why do we care about anything more than the lowest price? And that resonated with me, because that is the community concern, is the lowest price of this project. And as I look through the performance or the various criteria that we're going to grade, it reminds me of when I used to be employed, and I might apply for a position, and I would read the application, and these are the qualifications that we're looking for. And guess what? My resume pretty much reflected what they were looking for. And I could write six different resumes for six different jobs, which were all truthful, but all of them reflected what the job needed for performance. So as I look through these criteria, I can see that it's pretty easy for me to, under overall management approach, write down how I'm going to meet the goals and objectives of the project. Identify three key challenges. Top five risks to the owner's goals. I can just pretty much fill in the blanks for a lot of these criteria. So ensuring compatibility with Procore. I mean, that's pretty easy. So a lot of these are kind of pass-fail, depending upon how I write my design. And then we get to the bottom line, which is, what's my guaranteed maximum price? Provided that I meet the owner's goals and objectives, and I have an achievable strategy to meet the owner's budget and schedule. And that's really what we're looking for, is the owner's budget and schedule. So to me, that puts a lot of points on price proposal and life cycle, and very few points on the other criteria. And then that leads to the question that if we award 50 points for price proposal and life cycle cost, and we have two bids that are $10 million apart, how do you allocate those 50 points? I would, and those 50 points are only half of the total scoring. That makes them important, but not overriding. So if we're going to do that, award only half the points for the price, I would want some very objective way of how we're going to award those according to how much difference there is. If there's a $5 million difference, those are just some thoughts. I'm not saying how I'm going to vote or anything. It's just something that I would like to be part of our discussion, is that if we get the lowest cost proposal and yet we have other criteria that override that, how is the community going to react? So that's
That's all for me now.
Rob, do you want to respond real quickly?
Well, I think that's why the WRFCAC recommended 60 points for cost. Is that way it really couldn't be overridden by... I think that was a concern of theirs, that somebody might not have the lowest cost, but they scored high on every other item. I don't think it'll be that cut and dry on the other items, that the person that has the highest cost will score lowest on everything else. That typically doesn't work that way. But I could see the point of keeping the cost evaluation as over 50% if that, and I believe that it is really the overriding factor in this selection process. I agree with you that I've probably done the same thing with the resume. you look at the job description, find out what they want, and pick out the key values from your life experience that meet that.
Did you do it for this job?
And how you apportion cost as far as a 50 score. My simplistic way to do it would be the lowest proposer gets all 50 points, and you establish some sort of linear scale so that the highest proposer gets 0 points, and you rate them in between. I mean, that's a simplistic way to look at it, but...
I guess then it would be good if that were spelled out somewhere so that everybody understands that that's how it would work.
We'll include that in the RFP that we'll bring back to you next week.
Thanks, Rob. Matt?
Yeah, the first question I have is in terms of public outreach, looking at the evaluation criteria, where would public outreach, and I guess maybe... showing the public what is currently going on with the process, is that part of this?
No, I think that's our job as the project management team is to provide that public outreach. Now, the contractor will be a participatory member of that, but that is really not. They'll provide us information, be here to answer questions, but it will be up to us to... prepare the skeleton of that and to get that information out.
And then also in terms of this this document right now, how are we, will it be made public? Are people going to be able to come pick a copy up at the city offices? Because it's a lot.
Probably not pick up a copy, but there will be copies available to review. It exists right now on the city's project website, so you can review it there.
Okay.
We have a couple of copies at Public Works counter, so and you could probably sit in our front conference room and leisurely read through that.
Leisurely, yeah, sure. My third question is, in terms of looking through this, and I probably missed it when I looked through there, how will our accelerated timeline be conveyed to the bidders in this RFQ?
So it'll be conveyed via the submittal date. They will need to, at 2 p.m. or whatever time we pick on April 24th, they will have to have their proposal in our office. Otherwise, it will not be accepted. It's a very standard practice. They know those deadlines, they're not going to miss the deadline.
Got it. And also, I see Red. I like Red's point in terms of that 50%, because of WRFCAC, that really seems to be a nice solution to answering one of our goals, which is cost, is to perhaps making that price proposal life cycle cost a larger percentage than 50. And with other than that, that's all my questions or comments. Thank you.
All right, Matt, thanks. John?
Thank you again, Rob. So my recommendations would be first, and they're along the lines with what I think the mayor had said, immediately reach out to our project neighbor to the south and address the concerns and build them into the RFP process and selection process as appropriate. Second, is to, along the lines of what the mayor said, minimize the footprint of the administration slash operations component, and complete as soon as possible the feasibility study that is due for council on the alternatives. I think it's pretty much the same as what you said.
Okay.
So, third would be to add the city manager and the director of finance to the selection team. Fourth would be, with what Red had said, develop and utilize a criteria scoring scale to evaluate, for evaluators to use in scoring. And I mentioned one. I can give it to you. You can look at tons of other ones, but it's a simple, objective way of either giving the full 50 points for price or whatever, or cost, or somebody might get 40 based upon the criteria that you use, and I can certainly show that to you. The fifth was to adopt the WRFCAC / staff adjusted scoring schedule that you presented on page 12. The where am I? Sixth is to, along the lines of what the mayor said, and I think the word you used was an additive alternative, but to make the demolition the tear down of the old plant, what you call an additive alternative in the RFP. So I think that's the word you use. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and as opposed to not including it at all, that gives us opportunities to look at other alternatives. And my last was to consider the possibility of including incentives, and I think it was the same thing the mayor was talking about, for the further cost savings that occur during project completion. Incentives for the builder that are shared incentives. I worded it that way. I think your word might have been just a little bit different, but it's the same point, the risk issue.
Yeah.
Skin in the game is one of our former WRFCAC members would call it for the bidder that is successful. If there's a guaranteed price and there are opportunities that occur during construction where they can minimize, they determine something that they can minimize cost and it's approved, even greater, some kind of shared incentive for that. So
an example of that would be in the state standard specifications that Caltrans uses and that we use is for value engineering. There's a 50% share in standard in that cost savings. So we would set that up similar to that.
If I could also add, in the agreement itself, we do have a shared savings paragraph. That's just what Rob talked about, based on that standard, where if after the project begins, the design builder comes in with an idea to save cost, that cost savings is shared 50% between the city and the contractor.
Great. Great. The last is so general, I don't know how to do anything other than to say what several others have said. Minimize the prescriptive nature and maximize the opportunity for innovative, alternative, more cost-effective solutions to the scope that has been outlined in the RFP. That's really general, I know, but sorry. And thank you again.
All right, Marlis, thanks.
Well, were you reading mine this time? I totally concur with one exception, which I will mention, but I totally concur with my colleague, Mr. Heading, and also with the mayor. I would like to, in addition to everything you just specified, and what I'm going to disagree with you on is the evaluation criteria, but I would also like to see, as the mayor mentioned, a brief history of the project at the beginning. But everything else, yes. Demolition as an alternative, yes. My suggestion for sort of minimizing the prescriptive nature was to kind of going through it and adding where appropriate or equivalent quality or something to the effect that would suggest that you are encouraging something else if they can justify it. So it just alternative language that would promote that. As to the evaluation criteria, I had the same problem that Red had with what the technical proposal was. And I think the reason for that, if you look at your presentation, page 9, you have RFP proposal documentation requirements, and you have the technical proposal and the price proposal. And all of those things that are underneath there are part of the technical proposal. So in my recommendation of apportioning, I have the technical proposal, which includes all of these elements that you have here on page 9 as 40%, and I have them divided up. I combine some. So proposed design, which includes design, development, and management, 15. Management approach, 10, which includes subcontractor procurement, team city collaboration, 5%, project sequencing, 5%, quality assurance and control, 5%, which equals 40. The price proposal, 60%, which is schedule and cost controls. Well, I'm going to give this to you.
Well, could you repeat it so we can write
sure,
it down?
Yes, I will. I will repeat it. And the price proposal and life cycle costs. So adding up to 60%, and I'm not sure how I would divide between those two elements. But so that the price proposal itself would count for 60, the technical proposal itself would count for 40, and it includes all of these elements that are here listed on your document here, which made more sense to me. So that was, and I can read it again if you'd like.
Okay, so I'm writing it down.
Okay.
Okay, got it.
Technical proposal is all of these elements here, 40%. I have the proposed design, which includes design, development, and management of the design, 15%. Management approach, which includes the subcontractor procurement at 10%. Team city collaboration, 5. Project sequencing and scheduling, 5. Quality assurance and quality control, 5. So that's 40. Price proposal, schedule and cost controls, and as I say, I don't know how much. That maybe that's only 10, maybe it's 15, and price proposal and life cycle costs are 45, or it could be 10 and 50, but 60%. Well, price proposal, the
so
total.
So do you want to go on to your next one then? Yeah, if you could just keep going. And we're taking notes so we can kind of dial in the discussion there.
Okay, that's it.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay. So a lot of your discussion is primarily around evaluation criteria. And then
yes.
So we can dial in all the conversation, right. So we got it. So we had, I think we've got everything. We had a lot of comments around evaluation criteria and scoring. We did have demo as additive alternative.
Right.
We had landscape enhance ag buffer, which would include contacting Mr. Mano and neighbors to dial that in. But as far as the RFP goes, we want to be able to add that, you know, something into that. There was also incentives for cost savings, which was language in there. We also and I think Mike, you commented to that's currently in the RFP. So we're oh, pardon me?
In the agreement.
Okay, so we're good there. So minimize prescriptive obligations, but maximize some. Talk about that.
Yeah, and read it back what I said. Do you have it? Did you write it down, Rob? Minimize the prescriptive nature of the RFP and maximize the ability to be creative, innovative, and whatever.
Maximize. I'm sorry.
minimize prescriptive nature and maximize opportunity for innovation / cost-effective solutions than has been outlined in the RFP.
Outlined, yes.
Okay. So we've covered that, and we've got agreement on that so far. I mean, if there's any things, then we'll get to how we dial the rest of this in. And if you can add to what we've talked about so far, I just want to make sure that we've covered everything. And I'm not certain that we necessarily need to make a motion with this, other than everything that's we've discussed, we've got consensus on.
And the history of the project.
And that was
and
as
goals.
Far as the goals and history. The history of the project. Okay, and acceptably.
And
the admin building was put in there as far as removing the drawing that was in there and just put language in there to what the needs are for admin and operations.
And as I stated, we owe you the analysis what needs to be in there.
Yeah.
Just for a little bit of clarification, I think we've used technical proposal, meaning two different things in this document. So I think we need to clarify in the criterion that that's more related to the design. The proposed design, we need to call it something else in there because we have it in the RFP, the technical proposal, as all the other components, and we've used it twice with two different meanings to it. So thank you for catching that. So what we need to say there is proposed design rather than technical proposal.
So we've had quite a bit of input. So we're pretty good on what the discussion points have been. I think the most one in flux is the
scoring.
The scoring criteria, if you will, and we've had different various input on that. So just want to either close the loop on that or understand that you're going to bring back some alternatives for us to finalize next Tuesday. And we don't necessarily have to do that tonight.
Well, what I've heard is, I think there's consensus for this, is that the cost, the price proposal and life cycle cost, should exceed 50% of the evaluation. And for each of the criteria, we need to have objective scoring, how you get to those points. So we need to bring that definitely back to you. But what I've heard is that price proposal probably needs to go to the WRFCAC recommendation of 60%, and we need to make reductions in most appropriately would be the design to make that 15 points or 15%. And that's easy math for me. It still adds to 100.
I would concur with what Marla said, and I wrote it down. I'm sure you did too. I feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, I really want to maximize the price and the life cycle cost because I don't know how we would explain to the community if we did not take the lowest cost because we evaluated other criteria higher. So I just want to stress how important that is to me.
Okay. So it sounds like we've got consensus on everything that's discussed, and if we need to read that back one more time, I'm open to that. But I think we've covered everything, and I would expect that that itemized list will be part of the staff report, and
yes,
we can validate that, okay, these points, these are what we talked about, and prior to the meeting, we'll be able to have input and make sure that we're prepared coming in.
Yeah, as I stated, I think the best way to do it is instead of reprinting this with changes is have a fairly simple table with the item that council is recommending, for example, the admin building, how we've addressed that, and what pages that will occur in the document.
Okay.
And then have that for each of the items.
Okay.
And as far as the scoring table goes, I think we take another shot at it based on council's recommendations, present that, and at the next meeting, I think we have another opportunity. If we didn't quite get the scoring right, you have an opportunity to make changes to that so that we ensure that all the needs are met of the community delivering the lowest price project.
Okay. Any further comments then?
I just wanted to reiterate your point and just make sure it gets captured somewhere that and it's in there about the contact of individual council members from the bidders, and just make sure that that comes back and that's reaffirmed. I know it's in there in the RFP, but just the explanation of what that really means from a public standpoint would be helpful.
Okay.
A little further description of it, I guess.
Okay, if there aren't any other further comments on this and we have an understanding of the list that we've discussed, then we can conclude the meeting. No further more comments? We've done public comment on this? Yep. Yeah. Okay. All right, with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting at this time, and we'll see everybody on Tuesday for our regular city council meeting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks, everybody. Thanks.